This podcast is named after the hometown creek that runs by our backwoods bonfire pit. It was created as an opportunity for listeners to hear from many knowledgeable people. A lot of these conversations happen while sitting around the same fire pit where it all started. My name is Stephen Riley, and I believe in the God of the Bible, which affects how I look at the world. I've had my questions and doubts, which has led me down a path of seeking the truth. My hope with this podcast is to help address those tough questions, lingering doubts, and reoccurring apprehensions that believers and non-believers share. If you enjoyed this podcast, share with others. And if you don't, that's okay. Now listen, reflect, and grow with us on this episode of the Chew Creek Podcast.
Been an arborist for 2 years now. So, climb trees all day.
It's a pretty sweet gig.
Yeah, climb trees when I was a kid. Figured it makes sense to do it as a career. So that clicked.
Yeah,
a couple
awesome.
Years back. Yeah.
And we are actually sitting around a fire.
Yeah, just like the old days.
Yeah, where our conversations first started getting deep, and where we got to hang out. We would camp out. So this is in our backyard. And it's down, we got about 6 acres here, so it's down deep in the woods a little bit, and it's away from all the houses.
Got some good stars tonight.
Yep, we built this sweet bridge.
I forget how nice the stars can be out here.
It is
Cowper
awesome.
County.
It's honestly the best place in Cowper County.
Yeah, we got the bridge that we built to our left.
Mm-hmm.
Used to be a suspended bridge, but we used Walmart ropes to construct it, so it didn't last
very long. Dude, it was the best bridge ever, though.
It was great. This area has been washed out a few times by all the rain this past couple years.
We've had a lot of washing out. I remember one time it turned into a beach because we had
all the sand got pushed up here.
There was sand everywhere from the creek, and it was awesome. Yeah, so let's bring up. What was that? Ooh, so you can hear.
What was that?
I'm assuming that's an owl.
Oh, that's an owl.
I think it's an owl, yeah. So it sounds like a coyote screaming, but I think it's just an owl. Because we don't have any coyotes in Cowper County.
Jordan and I actually had a name for that back in the day. We used to hear it. We called it the Lamoggle.
I think I remember hearing that.
A mix between a lamb, a dog, and an owl, so we called it the Lamoggle.
That's pretty funny.
So. Yeah. Out here, we're hearing all that now. Yeah, anyway.
So we started working at this coffee bar together.
Yeah.
It was called the Lobby Coffee Bar. I think you worked there for like maybe a couple more months than I did.
So yeah, there first. I started with it when it actually, like, before it opened, we started doing work there. I was the manager, the events manager.
Yep, gotta grab that log.
Yeah, that was when the coffee bar was open until 10 o'clock at night, and that was awful.
It was awful. It was awful.
Except nobody came in from 8 to 10. Yep. So.
But I do remember.
We used to jam out.
Yeah, so we got super close through this random coffee bar job. Both baristas. Yeah. And then we had a little.
Well, I think it's cool seeing like the God thing of it, because I have been playing guitar and stuff since high school.
Mm-hmm.
And you had just gotten out of high school, and you kind of were teaching yourself guitar.
Yep.
You even got lessons for a while.
yeah.
From voice stuff.
From a friend at church, actually.
Yeah, and then you learned that, and then we started trying to do covers and stuff, so we'd bring the box drum and our guitars
into work. Yeah, and it was awesome.
And we would literally look forward to like 8 o'clock when people stopped coming in, because then we'd go into that center in that behind the glass doors where there's a really nice echo.
Yeah, we were hiding. We would hide the instruments back behind the wall. And then when people would come in, we'd be hot. So behind this door, this glass door, nobody could see through it, but we could see people come in.
So we'd sit out there and we'd see if anybody was coming, but meanwhile, we'd just sit back there and jam.
Yeah.
What do we end on?
Lobby stuff.
Okay. And that's when we were playing music. And then I think you had started climbing a couple months before that.
Yeah, I think, so you guys had originally
Boughton.
Yeah, is that a word?
Boughton.
But you guys had gotten harnesses for, because we were trying to build
the hammock, Ryan and I. Yeah. We were trying to build the hammock and the tree, and now I could do that so easy being an arborist. But back then I didn't have that knowledge, that skill set. But yes, we had harnesses.
And that,
you guys ended up buying actual rock climbing stuff, didn't you?
Yeah, well, so you guys had Black Diamond harnesses, which are it's an actual brand. So I was like, okay, that's kind of cool. But I was like, what's the point of getting a harness if I'm not going to use it to climb? And so I was like, all right, so I'm getting my tax refund back. And that's going to be like a decent amount. So I was like, maybe I'll have enough to get some climbing gear. And so, yeah, I mean, that's exactly what happened is I got that money back and like instantly spent it on a brand new climbing rope, like a couple carabiners I needed, like some static rope for looping it to trees at Carter Rock or Great Falls. And I mean, it was awesome. I mean, those are the top places we had to climb around here, really. So not a lot of
Carter
sport.
Rock, yeah. No, we started out top roping at the local crag.
Yep.
You taught yourself how to rig up a top rope on YouTube. I mean, you taught me.
No, actually, so I learned a lot of my climbing skills on YouTube, but I will say that I walked into an REI and talked to worker there.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they were like tying things around like bookshelves and like trying to show me how I can rope up the trees. And I was like, and the only knot that I knew at the time was a figure eight. So I was like, so can I figure eight that? And they're like, yeah, you can figure eight everything.
It's a lot easier to do a freaking bowline.
It's like, or you can just do bowline or a friction knot. And I was like, I don't know what that is. So I'm just going to figure eight everything. So
and
I
used to. We used to try and equalize it with a figure
with
eight.
A figure eight
and it was
impossible.
Just a pain in the butt.
So when I first started climbing, I had figure eights on literally everything.
Yeah.
Because that's all I knew how to tie first. Because I learned how to tie the figure eight actually off of YouTube, but I was tying it. And I was seeing if I could tie it around things so I could do it on a tree. And so I was tying around, I remember doing it in our living room, tying around like a TV stand. And I was like, hey, it seems pretty safe. I don't tell people now when I like do interviews for climbing and stuff that I learned off of YouTube. I do later. Like if I get the job, I'll tell them. But... usually not the first thing that comes up.
Yeah, I mean, I was a recreation major, so I had always, everybody that I knew like climbed and stuff, but I had never really been into climbing. Mm-hmm. And never had like seen I wanted to climb because I thought it would be like a cool way of like, if there was something that I couldn't get to, knowing how to climb would be a good way to get there.
Yeah, well, I remember having a fight with you, or an argument with you, because of that.
Because I thought climbing was stupid.
Because you were like, man, I'm not going to climb if it's not to get anywhere. And I said, I hate you right now because I climb because it's awesome. And
that was back when I was trying to just put you down for anything. I was trying to find a way to put you down.
I don't want to climb if I'm not doing it to get to the top of like a mountain or something. I was like, dude, there's way more to it than that.
Yeah, and then for you had been climbing for a couple months and I don't remember what made me want to do it more.
I think you saw Valley Uprising or something on Netflix.
That might have been it, yeah. I watched Valley Uprising and I was like, shoot, I want to climb again.
Yeah, that's when Valley Uprising was on Netflix. I don't think it is anymore. I think they got Don Wall instead.
Yeah, so then I guess I watched that and I was like, let's get in and climb it. And then that's when you and I worked at the lobby and we started going to Carter Rock at 5 a.m.
Dude, those were the times.
Oh, man. We would wake up. Exhausted, check the temperature and the weather, make
sure
it
was both
okay.
Worked the same shift too.
Yeah, that was when our shift was like from 2 to 10, I think.
Yep.
2 in the afternoon to 10, so we'd wake up and we'd drive out to Carter Rock at 5 a.m. and we'd climb until like 12.
And I remember like...
we'd be the first ones there. We'd be running out in the woods and it'd be dark with our headlamps on.
Watching the sunrise over the cliff, dude. It was awesome, man.
Right there on the Potomac River.
We'd literally be setting up climbs.
That was the closest crag to us, and it was about an hour and a half away.
Dude, it was awesome.
It's honestly, it is still to
it's
this day.
A good crag. I think the highest climb they have is like a 5.9, but.
Yeah. Oh, no, I do. There is one 5.12 there, I think.
Oh, okay.
But I will
say. But
it's
also top rope 5.12.
Yeah, yeah. But because of it being like, you know, the stomping grounds a little bit, for lack of a better
our
term.
Stomping grounds, yeah.
I think like
we discovered it.
Even going out to Oregon, like, I love Smith Rock and everything. That's still like easily one of my favorite places to climb. But like, even after going there, I'm like, man, I kind of miss Carter Rock a little bit.
It's something about like having a place that like feels like yours, which I think is like what's going to be cool about being in North Carolina is I'm planning on having like Rumbling Bald climbing area there. I want to make that like my climbing spot, you know, that I can know and teach people.
Yeah, that's sweet.
Yeah, but that's where we got close doing that kind of stuff. And your climbing career has taken, and that was before I was an arborist, so your climbing career has taken off in the direction of
I want to just keep climbing and do it for a job.
Yeah, and then that was when I actually ended up watching a video that was from Petzl.
Mm-hmm.
Petzl had a, it was called Labor of Love.
Yeah, so those of you who don't know what Petzl is, it's a climbing brand, but they also make arborist gear and stuff like that.
But there was a YouTube video that was called Labor of Love. And it was an arborist that was climbing with like all his Petzl gear, and it was like he was climbing trees all day, and it was like a whole video about what he does, and for some reason it just like all of a sudden it like clicked, and I was like, wait, like
I kind of want to do that.
That's what I'm supposed to be doing.
Yes.
So here I am, you know, 3 years later after seeing that video, 2 years later, and I've been an arborist.
Yeah, that's awesome, dude. And it's crazy because I remember you saying, like, oh, like, being in the lobby working together, like, he thought he was going to be part of, I think, the going to Honduras ministry, or you're doing something with them.
I did want to do missions. That was the one thing that I actually liked.
Mm-hmm.
There's not much else that I was really pumped about doing there, but I think you learn a lot if you fight through places that you don't exactly want to be.
For sure.
But, yeah, I wanted to be in that ministry. I think we still both have hearts for ministry.
100%.
It's just figuring out how to do it with rock climbing.
I'm hoping to go out to Honduras this summer, hopefully. And so I'm trying to get better at my Spanish right now. It definitely takes a lot of work and a lot of patience, but I think it'd be really cool because I remember I only knew like a few words when I went out to Honduras. Like when I was a senior in high school, I think, is when we went out there last. And I remember just not really knowing that many words.
Yeah.
And it just, it stinks a little bit because I do remember when we were at the elementary school with Hondurans, like trying to help out there, you know, like we always did for most of the mission trips that we did with Chesapeake Church. Because when we first started going, it was in El Ayudante, and now it's in a different location, which is sweet. And you went to the new location, but I haven't been yet.
Yeah.
Pretty excited for that. But I think what I was trying to say was I remember going to elementary school, these kids were all in a group pointing at me and laughing. So I was like, I don't like this at all because I don't know what they're saying. So I was like, the only term, broken term that I knew was, or word, was fuerte. And I knew that meant strength. So I was like, I just went up to like the first kid that was pointing at me laughing. I was like, no fuerte. And they all just started laughing. And they all just started like dying laughing. And then that day ended. We come back the next day. And I get out of the bus, and like 20 Honduran kids basically tackle me, saying, no fuerte, no fuerte, no fuerte. And it was awesome. So it was like, even though I like had broken Spanish, I was still able to like have fun with them and laugh with them. And they, so I think they liked me.
Like, it's cool how barriers just like break down when there's like goofy things that you find in common. I mean, like, just like for us, like when we started finding common ground with music and then with climbing, and that's when we got really close. And
some history from there.
I do remember this like specific feeling when you started really loving Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember how seeing you do that, like saw that you were getting like pumped up about Jesus. And I was like, kind of, I guess it's probably how parents feel towards their kids, really see something. I remember like seeing you kind of make that transformation of, I actually realized that you started thinking deeper, and it went from like, I think you and I both kind of struggled with things in
doubts,
the same area of it.
Doubts and stuff. Yeah. And dude, honestly, that is a big reason why this podcast is even being started.
Mm-hmm.
One, because of our conversations around this fire pit, and then two, because like I've learned a lot through doubting, and so I have like a lot that I want to say to people and people to know, and I think this was the best way that I could do it, because there's so many conversations that need to be heard, because I have so many solid conversations with you and with, like, I always bring up my sweet mate Steve, because we always had some solid talks, you know. We just shared laundry rooms, and we would just like open up our doors. I'm kind of bored right now, but yo, Steve, let's hang out. So just like have a beer, hang out, have a good conversation, and it was just always good.
Yeah.
So I think that's something that's definitely helped me too. But I mean, that was definitely a time when I was going through like a period of just doubt, and I remember almost being a little bit angry. God, why are you like letting me doubt? Like, why do you want me to have doubt if you're real, you know? And that was probably the lowest point that I hit, because I just remember everything that I had learned in my entire life, because we grew up Christians.
You start to question it.
And then you start to question, and you're like, man, this sucks. So God, what are you doing to me? It
comes time to figure it out on your own.
Yeah, and that was honestly, when I look back to it, I'm like, oh, that's what God was doing, because I've learned so much from that, because I was researching all the time, reading scientific and theological books, combining them, seeing the differences, seeing the, you know, I'd be searching all night just trying to figure out questions that I had and all this stuff, and it's helped me grow so much, for sure.
I think one thing that I always, like, because there'll still be those days where you're like, even just like randomly, like, oh yeah, is this God stuff real? Just like a momentary lapse of like thinking, you know, like, hey, okay, what's the purpose of all this?
Yeah.
But one of my favorite things in terms of like the outdoors is one of my favorite C.S. Lewis quotes, or actually one of my favorite quotes from him probably ever, is you can ignore, but you can nowhere evade the presence of God. Mm. The world is crowded with him.
Yep.
And that's like what I, that's why I like being outside so much, is because.
Yeah. Honestly, I will probably bring up C.S. Lewis on this podcast
an annoying amount of times. Yeah.
Because I've learned so much from, especially Mere Christianity, and especially in like the time of doubt, reading Mere Christianity was a huge blessing. I mean, C.S. Lewis is super wise. That book is solid.
Yeah, all of his, he's just a really good author and really deep thinker of his time.
And his analogies, man, unreal. Sometimes I would have to read it 3 or 4 times just to be like, wait, what is he trying to?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, so I want to hit back to climbing because recently there's been a couple injuries actually in climbing and a death.
Oh, Brad, go Brad.
Dude, yeah, it sucks, man. Because I remember seeing him on Real Rocks and stuff, so it seems like he'd have been a good guy to go climbing with. So I could definitely tell that a lot of climbers who did know him were hurting, for sure. And it's crazy because he free-soloed a lot of things. You know, like you've seen the movie Free Solo with Alex Honnold. And so it's climbing with no rope. You are just up there trusting everything, and if you slip or fall, then that's it. I mean, you're depending on how big the climb is, but he's always climbing big stuff.
That was always how I expected him to pass away, if that was how he was gonna
go. I was like, so when I first saw the article, like, oh, Brad Gobert died, I think I saw it on Instagram, somebody posted about it.
I was like, he probably
slipped free soloing, honestly.
Yeah.
But come to find out, he was trying to help out his climbing partner, I guess. He was trying to help out his climbing.
Simul repelling.
Yeah. So he was simul repelling. I guess his partner got stuck or something. And so he goes over to like try to help him. And
I think he had a gree-gree or something.
Knot came through the belay device?
Yeah, came through his belay device because he didn't have a knot on the end.
It was crazy because I was like, oh, wow. So,
I think being an arborist is one thing we talk about all the time. Is and like when we have accidents, or if like things get broken on a job, or there's some random thing that happens, it's usually with the really simple stuff.
Yeah.
Like it's usually on the stuff where you're like, oh, I've done this a million times. Here we go. it's going to be super easy. And those are the things that cost people their lives, unfortunately.
Yep.
Everybody gets complacent.
Yeah.
You know, we get complacent in our faith.
Yep.
We get complacent when it comes to climbing things and just in general safety.
Definitely. And I think that's maybe something that went through their heads. And they're,
he's I'm just sure. Like, I can't oh, you know imagine. What?
Like, I've done Simon Bells a billion times. I'll just forget. Yeah. Like, he didn't even think about it, I'm sure. And just, like, throws the rope down, starts rappelling, and something just got really messed up. And
I mean,
you're not really expecting
it. Sounds
it,
like they were rappelling off the same rope.
Yeah.
With the Simon
From rappelling. What I can picture, that's what I'm looking at.
Because Brad Gobert came off and fell, like, 100-something feet, and then his partner fell, like, 60 or something.
Yeah, but survived.
Yeah, but survived.
So his partner survived,
but some broken bones.
Yeah, and then I know. Did you see the thing about Emily Harrington?
Mm-mm.
She took a fall, actually. She took a fall, survived. I want to say it was in Yosemite, and so she took a fall and then had to get like evac'd out. They had to get park rangers. So in bigger climbing areas, they actually have park rangers that are literally climbing rangers. So they will go out, and they know all the rope stuff. You can't just have a regular park ranger going out to do something like that.
Yeah,
or a regular
they'll know,
team.
Like, a good rappel rescue. And
they know all the routes on LCAP and Half Dome.
So they can do an appropriate rescue.
Exactly.
Makes sense.
Yeah, so apparently she was saying, like, thankful for Alex being there. So, like, all those famous climbers were there when she fell. Of course. And so she had like
nice and humbling
all these famous climbers like coming to help her and make sure she was okay, which is sweet. But
man, I can't imagine taking that, being in North Carolina. Now we have we have 1,000-foot cliffs out there.
And you guys got multi pitches,
right? We got multi pitches. A lot of stuff is trad, and I haven't done any trad yet.
Yeah, so let me explain a multi-pitch to people who don't know what it is. So basically, think of like a regular climb in a climbing gym. So it goes to the top and it ends. So yeah, multi-pitch. Yeah,
60-foot climb at the most probably.
Yeah, at the most.
For a single pitch, but in a gym it's probably more like 30.
Yeah. I mean, essentially it's how you can climb a mountain. you have bolts in between each climb. So basically you climb 60 feet up or whatever it is, and then you set up for the next climb. And there's a lot more to it, obviously, but I'm not going to explain all of that right now.
So, yeah, I mean, I think a good way for, like, sport-wise, well, or some, like, popular cliffs, you do your first pitch, and it usually stops at an anchor point, which is either an anchor that you're going to set up with your triad gear, or it's a two-bolt anchor of actual bolts that are in the wall.
Yep.
And that's usually where the first pitch ends. And then from there, you'll top belay once you get to the top, and you'll belay after you've led, and you'll just like kind of, there's multiple ways that they use to belay, but they'll essentially, the person on the ground will then come up and climb up to the point where they're at.
Yep.
And then they'll reset, or whoever's going to lead, maybe they won't need to reset, and the person who just followed is going to lead next, and it's real easy to switch over. And then they'll do the pitch up to the next point. And sometimes, you know, walls in Yosemite, they have freaking
15 pitches.
Yeah. I can't imagine.
Or more than that, I think.
Yeah, and a lot of stuff they do there. I mean, they have bolts and stuff all over Yosemite, but a lot of guys still do like trad things there as well.
It's definitely my dream to get out there and just, honestly, I lived down in Oregon for 5 months, and I just wanted to drive to Yosemite just to touch the rock.
Just touch it.
I just want, because, like, seeing it in Valley Uprising, and, I mean, we went there as kids, but I just don't remember appreciating it like I would now. So I really want to go back and just see the rock and maybe do a route or two and just, like, call it a day. And just be like, wow, that was cool. So I don't know if I'll ever...
We might get out there one day.
I would love to sleep on a wall. I think that
I would too.
That is
get
definitely
a little portal edge.
That is definitely on my bucket list, you know.
Oh yeah, for sure. I just read this book called Camp. It's literally just about different ways of camping.
That's sweet.
Some of it it's on. Like, they do anything from, like, camping out in the cold, or they just do, like, people who just go to sunrise and, like, camp out for a couple hours just to watch sunrise. Then they do camping all over, like, family camping. They do, you know, camping with a dog. They have all these different stories of camping. One of them is, you know, portage camping.
Yeah.
There's a couple of sections on that.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Which we've never been on a wall long enough to have to warrant.
No, yeah. I mean, I've done six pitch, but, I mean, that takes, at least that route that we did took about 3 hours, I want to say. Because you're doing, it's not necessarily that it takes you that long to climb it. It's just you have so much rope work that you have to do. It's just being super safe. You don't want to rush through a multi-pitch. At least I don't.
Double, triple checking everything.
Yeah. So, I mean, we did. I literally met a guy driving through, up to Oregon, my job in Oregon. And we just met climbing next to each other. And I was like, hey, dude, you seem pretty cool. We should climb here.
We should do a multi-pitch here.
I came back to Smith Rock, like, I was in Coos Bay, Oregon, so I was probably 4.5 hours away. Mm-hmm. So he lived right by Smith Rock, so I literally just met him there. And we started climbing multi-pitches together, and it was awesome.
Yeah. I still have not done a multi-pitch.
Dude, I know. I want to take you up one so bad.
Western North Carolina has a lot of trad, so I've been slowly collecting trad. Haven't done a multi-pitch yet, but I'm trying to get ready to do trad.
Yeah, and so trad gear is super expensive.
Yeah.
So I don't know if...
$70 a piece of gear.
Yeah. And then you have different sizes, too, so that's the hard thing.
A standard rack is, means different things every place you go.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's some climbs in the Carolinas that the guidebooks will be like, oh, you only need one, you know, number four cam.
Yep.
Or there'll be places that, but the thing is, a climb could also have multiple number four cams. So you can get every layer or every number of cams, but still could be not enough to complete a climb.
Exactly.
So, I don't know. I'm still like... I like the idea of being, like, free to climb anywhere with trad gear, but I don't like the idea that you have to carry so much on.
This is the climbing that you have, that you fought me on wanting to do.
Pretty much, yeah. This is what I explained was the only kind of climbing that makes sense.
This is the reason why you weren't climbing at first, is because you were saying, well, if I can't just climb any mountain to the top... then I'm not going to climb. It's stupid.
Did argue that. Now I'm getting to the point where it's like, all right, now it's time for me to learn how to climb to any mountain. How to climb just randomly with just the gear from the ground.
I tried to explain to you. I was like, no, there's steps to that, though. You can't just climb a mountain.
Yeah, it's making sense. And now the closer I get to doing trad, the more nervous I get because...
It's scary.
Trad's scary.
I've only done it once, dude.
Yeah.
Actually...
It's quite technical, and I think it's... really big head game.
Yeah, and that was because, I mean, we've done sport a lot, you and I.
Wait, you've done trad?
Yeah, because I did it out in Washington with Alex Nickum.
Oh, just like, so he taught you how to play some stuff?
Yeah, Alex Nickum is the man, so Alex, if you ever hear this, I love you, brother. But, dude, he made me do some sketchy stuff out there.
That's how you get pushed.
So, hold on, let me explain this to you, because I don't even think I've told you about this. So, basically, we're in Leavenworth, which is a climbing area out in Washington.
Uh-huh.
And so, this is backcountry climbing, you know. You are hiking up a mountain just to get to the climb. So, we were hiking, it probably took us 30 minutes to get to the bottom of this climb, just straight through the woods. So, you're going uphill the entire time, super exhausting. And then you're like, all right, let me climb this 500-foot mountain real quick. And then, so, I mean, I love it. It was awesome. But we get to the base of this climb, and he's like, all right, dude. So this is, like, from this guidebook, it's saying it's a 5'8 slab. So I was like, okay, I hate slab, but 5'8's easy.
Carolinas are a ton of slab.
Yeah. Yeah, dude. So I was like, 5'8, that's easy. I'm a stud. I'm going to knock this out real quick. Now, I got up there, and I learned that I am not a stud. I got up there, and so there was one bolt on the entire route. So that was just to get past the lip of the climb, because there was, like, no places where you could place gear.
Yeah.
So I clip in, I hook in and I'm like, all right, sweet, I'm safe. This is awesome. I'm gonna keep climbing. And I keep climbing. This one, it starts getting slabby, so my feet are just smearing on this rock. And
it's about trusting your gear.
If you don't know what smearing is, it basically just means that you don't have any place to really place your feet. You're kind of just, you're letting the leather of your shoes sink into the rock a little bit.
I always imagine smearing, like, if you're going up, like, a glass window, but you can actually walk up it.
But it has,
you have
it has
to
a
trust
more
yourself
feet.
To
yeah,
walk
yeah, yeah.
up.
Yeah, you're like, it's a glass window that's slanted. So there's like no good holds, no hand holds, no foot holds.
But it's all about trusting your hands and your feet and
yeah,
all that.
So you're like kind of walking up a little bit, but so it's a different type of climbing. So you're not just climbing straight up. So you would think, oh man, slab's way easy then because it's not a straight up wall. It's like, no, I'd way rather not climb slab.
We tried some slab climbing in what is it? Patapsco.
Oh yeah, and
Patapsco
we left
state for our state park. Yeah,
I think we left soon after
we
got there.
We gave up. Yeah, it had rained a couple of days before. Yeah. And just
well,
like,
my
no.
well, my Frostburg crag was all slab. That one little place we would go at night, we would climb there at night.
I got used to it.
But so let me get back to this story. Yeah, so sorry. I clipped into the bolt. I was like, all right, sweet, I'm safe. And so I start climbing. Alex teaches me, like, he's like, all right, this is how you place gear. Like, look for cracks and stuff when you get up there. And I was like, all right, dude, awesome. That's easy enough. Like, I know how to, I've seen this on YouTube videos. Like, I learned how to climb. Like, I know what I'm doing, dude. So, like, I get up there, and I'm about 10 feet past the bolt now, so it's not too bad. But I was like, all right, I'm going to start looking to, like, place some gear. And there's nothing, dude. I was looking everywhere. No cracks, no... literally nothing. I was like, all right, that's fine. Like, maybe it's just a little higher up. Somebody would have placed a boat if there was no place to put trad gear. So I was like, all right, I'll just keep going, and I'll just keep looking around. And so I was, like, taking the smallest piece that he gave me, and the smallest piece that exists, actually, and I was, like, putting
it. Was it a nut?
It was a nut.
A little tiny,
really small.
Micro nut.
Little nut. And so basically this is just a solid metal piece hooked to a wire. It sounds a little sketchy, but it's known to be pretty safe. So I'm climbing up this.
It's like if you took one of those really old, like iron nails that they used to build and just cut off the tip of it, yeah. Attach a wire to it, and you're shoving that.
Yeah, exactly.
Into a rock.
All right, so I'm climbing up this, and I'm like taking this little piece that he gave me, and I'm like, kind of slapping it on the rock to see if it'll fit in the smallest places that I'm looking at. I'm like, okay, it might fit. No, not even close. And I'm like, fit here? Nope. I was looking everywhere, couldn't find anything. I was like, all right, 15 feet up. If I fall now, it might hurt a little bit. So I was like, all right, I'm good. I'm gonna keep climbing. And at this point, I'm like 30 feet up, and I'm like,
so you're running it out.
It's starting to get a little sketchy up here.
Run out there, bud.
And like, and so we're doing a pretty big pitch. So I think this first pitch was like a solid 80 feet. It was a pretty big first pitch. And so I was like, all right, man, this is scary.
Yeah.
So at this point, literally looking around everywhere to put gear so I can be safe for a second and like breathe. And I cannot find any place. So I'm like sweating. My palms are sweating. Everything's sweating. And so I'm at the top of this climb. And Alex, I can't even see him because I'm past this bulge of this climb.
Yeah.
And so I can't see him. I can't really yell down to him. I remember trying to and being like, hey, man, it's super run out. And he just goes, you got to keep going now. I was like, you're right.
You're not coming back.
And I was like, you're right. And that's kind of when I realized, like, I started climbing up more, and I realized, I was like, oh, man, I'm like 40 feet up past my last placement of gear. So that means if I fall from here, I'm definitely hitting the ground. So I'm decking. I will hit Alex. And so I was like, oh, man, I have to relax. Like, and so, dude, I remember being up there and, like, praying to God. I was like, God, please help me to finish this climb. And I pray you help me relax. And I started getting what we call Elvis leg. So I started like really shaking, and I was like, God, please help me to finish this climb, or like I'm gonna die. I was like this is really scary.
I'm gonna die on this 5'8" slab.
I was like, God, I trust you. If I do die, like, thank you for this moment, and I'm ready to go if you think that this is my time, but God, I pray that I finish this climb. And so
it's gonna
I just
that
like
whole, like if I die before this climb ends.
Dude, honestly, I was yeah, it was bad, dude. I might have started to tear up a little bit, honestly. But I got to the top, and so I basically blacked out the last like 20 feet because I didn't see the bolts. But I was like, I'm just gonna climb, and I don't remember really climbing. I just remember kind of blacking out and then like ending up at the bolts. And I was like, I clipped my tethers and I was like, I can't believe I just. And I was like looking at my hands like I'm still alive. Yeah. Yeah, and I was like, oh my goodness. So normally when you're doing a multi-pitch, you want to swap leads, so it makes it easier. The next person comes up. So Alex following up, he's just top roping because I'm belaying him from above, which is hard to explain. I'm not going to try. Yeah. But
let's say that another time.
So I'm belaying him from above, and so he comes up, and I'm like, dude, you're going to lead the rest of this. And I was like, I will not lead the rest of this, dude. I am still scared out of mind. I'm shaking. And he was like, all right, man. Are you sure? And I was like, yeah, dude, I can't really climb right now. I'm freaking out.
I still haven't done a multi-pitch. I'm waiting for you to come teach me.
Yeah, man, I'm really excited.
I got a couple trad pieces now. I got five different size nuts, and then I got two cams. I'm still not even close.
Honestly, I'm so psyched for that day that we get to climb multi-pitches together because it's going to be sweet. And, like, dude, when I was climbing at Smith Rock, I was like, man, this will blow Thomas's mind. Like, I wish he was here right now. Like, this is insane. So I was like, man, Thomas and I are definitely taking a trip out here. One of the points I wanted to hit was it definitely sucks. Like, especially with Brad Gobright passing away, this kind of made me think, like, it sucks that a lot of climbers aren't really believers.
Everybody kind of has, like, their past experience of what Christianity is. And to some people, it's...
And it's like, man, there's way more to it, though. You can't just go off your childhood experiences of you walking into a church and seeing a bunch of old people and be like, oh, that's all Christianity is. It's just a bunch of old people sitting in a church.
And I think things like climbing get more beautiful when you become thankful about a creator.
You're like, man, this is insane. I mean, even in Valley Uprising, one of the guys in there was like, man, it kind of...
You looking up at
actually, it. I think it was Yvon Chouinard, the guy.
Yeah, it was Yvon Chouinard.
Yeah, he owns.
So it makes you wanna.
He founded.
He's like almost
Patagonia.
He's like almost made a believer out of me.
Yeah, he's like, oh man, like looking at Yosemite's walls, almost made a believer out of me. Like it's so beautiful. And it's like, dude, that's because there is a creator. You're right there, bro. You're right there.
Yeah. Yeah, things like Climbers for Christ. Like,
yeah,
some
so
really
I mean,
cool
there still is, but the main community that a lot of people have in their heads are not. Like, I mean, because Free
pot
Solo.
It's still the pot smoking hippies.
Yeah, the Free Solo came out, and so a lot of people know of Alex Honnold now.
Yeah, climbing is about to blow up.
It's been blowing up, dude.
Yeah, it has been.
It's like, man, science in so many ways is such a good thing for Christianity and such a good thing for showing our creator, you know? And it's like, man, do some research and you'll see that a lot of things it talks about in the Bible completely line up perfectly with science. And it's awesome.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think there's a lot that we can dig into about kind of the climbing community, but I think it comes back to, like, what school is the opportunity that the climbing community has opened up? I think everybody in the climbing community is really laid back and really open and...
Yeah, no, I agree.
So I think it's kind of like when it goes back to you talking about Honduras up at the beginning. And we were talking about how like the communication is interesting, but there's still like that something in common that we have as human beings. So the communication becomes easy. And I think when it comes to climbing, like, climbing becomes this thing that's, like, really easy to communicate about with to other people who love climbing and the outdoors in general. And I think that just that God has made that as a point for us is really cool. And I think that's what both of us are drawn to, connecting with people and loving people through the outdoors.
Yep.
And, like, hopefully, you know, if the opportunity presents itself, tell them about Jesus through it.
Yeah.
So I think it's really exciting, and it's going to be a cool thing to explore. And
Yeah, and I'm really excited also about this. This podcast will help hopefully reach a lot of the outdoor community too, and kind of get people thinking a little bit is the main goal.
Yeah.
Just think a little deeper and...
Yeah, and this is kind of an introduction podcast. We didn't go crazy deep or anything, but I think it's a...
I think it's a good start.
Good starting point of...
For sure.
Kind of what it'll be like.
Yeah, so...
I think there'll be a lot of chances to go really deep out here by the fire.
Yep.
By Chew Creek.
All right, guys, so thanks for listening.
Thanks for having me.
Awesome episode with my bro here. And we'll catch you next time.